The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to today's podcast, sponsored by Hillsdale College. All things Hillsdale at hillsdale.edu. I encourage you to take advantage of the many free online courses there. And, of course, to listen to the Hillsdale Dialogues, all of them at hughforhillsdale.com, or just Google Apple, iTunes, and Hillsdale. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway. I wasn't in high school the last time Columbia University had to shut down and had to arrest everyone. I don't remember it. I have no recollection of it. And I doubt very many people out there do. There's some nostalgia for the 60s among the septuagenarians out there. But by the time I got to college in the late 70s, it was just normal. And it's been normal for 50 years, almost 50 years. Now, Joe Biden has an anti-Semitism problem. That is the topic of the title of my new Fox News column, Joe Biden's Anti-Semitism Problem. And the problem is that anti-Semitism has been allowed to fester at college campuses across the United States for 10 years. Now it's exploded in anti-Israel, anti-Zionism, anti-Jew hatred. And it is Passover, so many of our Jewish friends are not listening this morning. And many of them have run away from campuses because they're afraid of getting pummeled. One girl got stabbed in the eye at Yale. There have been so many anti-Semitic incidents at Columbia that I don't know that any Jew will go there for 5 years. It's absolutely out of control. The updates this morning. Protesters were ordered to disperse, did not do so, and were arrested yesterday at NYU and at Yale. Other campuses have got their own encampments, quote, liberated zones. This is just the Occupy Wall Street nonsense of unwashed young people sitting around thinking they're doing something, looking for attention. Dozens of pro-Palestinian protesters were arrested at Yale, according to the Washington Post this morning. 47 students referred for disciplinary action. I hope they are expelled. Mom and dad not going to be very happy. They're paying $60,000 a year, and you get expelled after all those college applications because you wouldn't leave because you don't even know how to draw a map of the Middle East. Maybe you should have gone to school. Dozens were arrested at NYU as well as at Yale. And the Wall Street Journal reports, the Washington Post reports that the latest protests are stretching across an array of private and public college universities, including BU and the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, MIT, and, of course, Berkeley. The decision to cancel classes at Columbia, thus yielding to the protesters, has put their already beleaguered president into the danger zone of getting dumped. Wall Street Journal this morning, I got a couple of great things in the Wall Street Journal. My friend Ken Kachigan has a piece on Gavin Newsom. Whatever happened to Gavin Newsom? He was a rising star a few months ago, but bad governance and the phony factor caught up to him. You never want Ken to be upset with you. Ken is maybe America's most gifted speechwriter of the last 50 years. And he worked for Reagan. He worked for Nixon. He worked for George Duke Majan. He worked for pretty much everybody who ever needed a speech written. And now he's taking the measure of Gavin Newsom, who is not measuring up to Ken's standard. But the unsigned editorial from the Wall Street Journal this morning is titled "The Ivy League's Anti-Israel Protest Meltdown." Subhead: School officials reap what their politically monoculture faculties have sown. Anyone who thinks about concerns about anti-Semitism that they are overblown isn't paying attention to the scenes at elite universities, the journal writes. Anti-Israel, anti-Semitic protests at Columbia, Yale, and elsewhere are getting uglier. And it isn't clear that the progressives in charge of these institutions are up to the job of enforcing order or of protecting Jewish students. At Columbia in New York City, pro-Palestinian demonstrators have surrounded Jewish students to push them from a protest camp dominating the campus lawn. "Attention, everyone," a voice says in a campus video. "Can I get everyone to form a human chain? We have a Zionist at the entrance of our encampment." The Zionist was a Jewish student whose friend wore a necklace with a Star of David, according to News Israel correspondent Neria Krause. The Palestinian crowd followed the order to slowly walk and take a step forward so we can push them out of the camp. That is, by the way, assault and battery. Assault is the imminent fear of an unjustified touching. Battery is the touching. Many protesters on or near campus wear masks to disguise their identities. Students have to walk through a gauntlet to get to class. The protesters carry banners calling honor to the martyrs of Palestine and a sign pointing to a pro-Israel counter-protester is marked Al-Qassam's next targets. Al-Qassam is a military wing of Hamas. That's a call to kill Jews. On Friday, Columbia President Manoush Shafik invited police to clear the campus encampment. About 100 were arrested, but the demonstrators returned with a vengeance. Remember, it's Manhattan. Catch and release in Manhattan. It isn't clear that Ms. Shafik has the fortitude to handle them. In a statement on Monday, she told students that, quote, anti-Semitic language, like other language that is used to hurt and frighten people, is unacceptable, and that inappropriate action will be taken. The school moved all classes temporarily online to, quote, reset and, quote, de-escalate the rancor and to consider next steps. I don't think mom and dad are paying for online. No, I don't think so. But the protesters are winning the journal notes. They're allowed to shut down classrooms, instruction. Ms. Shafik's statement notes, there's a terrible conflict raging in the Middle East, but it doesn't include a single mention of pro-Palestinian groups as perpetrators of the campus harassment. Columbia also deactivated the university keycard of Jewish professor Shai Davidai and told him he was not permitted to enter the West Lawn, on ground that his plan for a counter-protest was a safety risk. So you see that that is preferring one form of speech over the other. Now, my entire Fox News column today is the one that's entitled Joe Biden's Anti-Semitism Problem, is asking, where is Joe Biden's Department of Education, which has within it a vast office for civil rights, and where is his Department of Justice, which has an entire division for civil rights? Where are they? They should be helping to catalog and, if necessary, arrest everyone committing acts of unlawful discrimination under the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Columbia's president may face a censure from its left-wing faculty, but what they really ought to face is a lawsuit from the Department of Justice. We haven't seen any of that yet. We'll talk more about that. But I got to get to cut number five, because Joe Biden, of course, gave a rousing speech yesterday on his, as he limped or sort of haltingly walked towards the helicopter. Here's President Biden, cut number five.
Protests on college campuses.
I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. That's why I've set up a program to deal with that. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians. And
so I set up a program to deal with the anti-Semitism, and I'm also concerned about those who don't understand the Palestinian problem. Good people on both sides, right, Joe? Good people on both sides. Remember when Donald Trump said that, the world melted down. It still melts down. Joe Biden brings it up in every speech that he gives on the campaign trail. President Biden is a menace to law and order because he doesn't know what's going on. He is an octogenarian who is clueless. He might watch Morning Joe if he's awake in time. That's about all the news that he gets. And he's clueless. This is going to get worse before it gets better, because anything that goes unchecked for a long time doubles in intensity by day. It's the old lily pond question. If you have one lily in a pond and it takes 10 days for that lily to reproduce and cover half the pond, how long does it take to cover the rest of the pond? One day. Right? It reproduces one a day. Just everyone doubles a day. One becomes two on the second day, two becomes four on the third day, four becomes eight on the fourth day. If it takes 10 days to cover half the pond, How many days does it take to cover the whole pond? One day. That's what happened with this. No one took the first lily pad out of the pond, and now every campus is covered with anti-Semitism. There is other news. Wait till this takes off, because the IDF is going into Rafah soon. Satellite images show a tent compound under construction in Khan Yunis. That's a city in the middle of Gaza. It's been cleared of Hamas. Hamas has retreated to Rafah. Looks like the IDF is getting ready to lead the students or the Palestinians from Rafah, the children and the women, not the teenage and higher boys and men, going to lead them from Rafah to this new tent city outside of Khan Yunis. Then they're going into Rafah, and they're not going to stop. They don't care what you think. They don't care what I think. They're going to kill the 5,000 to 10,000 terrorists or arrest them or bury them alive in tunnels. They're going to go get their hostages. They're going to finish their job, and they don't care what college students in America say, especially those who are about to be arrested. If they didn't get arrested yesterday, they're going to get arrested today or the next day, because you know what? People have had it with college kids. I'll be right back on Hugh Hewitt. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. David Drucker is with the Washington Examiner. Good morning, David. How are you? Oh, a tie.
Good morning, Hugh. Good to see you.
You've got a tie on this morning. What do you got? Are you doing a job interview somewhere? Is the Dispatch not good enough for you?
Just worked out that way, Hugh, but I didn't think I'd disappoint you or the audience. So I just
I'm very impressed. No one ever wears a tie around here. David, I want to know how you think the protests at Columbia, at Yale, at NYU, at Harvard, at Michigan, at Berkeley, all across the country, how are they playing for the president of the United States? Because I think he's got an anti-Semitism problem on his hands.
Well, look, I mean, I think it's a problem for him in regard to the fact that the younger voter, the college voter, the 18 to 29 year old is a crucial part of his voting base, his coalition. They turned out, it's not that they voted for him in large numbers in 2020. They turned out big for him in 2020. And this issue continues to be a problem for him in that regard. And I don't think that there's anything he can do to mollify them, even though he continues to try. And I think that what these protests have shown, and they are blatantly anti-Semitic. This is not about protesting the Israeli government or Israeli policy. This really goes beyond that. And it's just targeting Jews. And anybody that they can find that is Jewish or looks Jewish or they think is Jewish are the people they're screaming at. Unless the president were to have a wholesale change of policy, stop supporting Israel rhetorically, stop U.S. aid to Israel, like the aid that he's about to send when he signs that foreign aid package that's supposed to pass the Senate on Tuesday or Wednesday, today or tomorrow, there's not much he's going to be able to do. And so from a political standpoint, that's the problem, is that if he loses their votes or if they sit on their hands, he's going to have to find a way to replace them.
Let's play for David Drucker. Cut number five. This is the president haltingly walking to Marine One yesterday.
And the anti-Semitic protests on college campuses.
I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. That's why I've set up a program to deal with that. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians.
So, David Drucker, is that a little bit good people on both sides?
I don't think it's the same as people on both sides, but I think given the fact that the president made Charlottesville such a key component of his message, whenever you're going to then muddy the waters, it gives your opponent a chance to say, that's the same thing that I did, and therefore they're hypocrites, and you don't want to get criticized in the same way that you're criticizing your opponent when the expectations for you are different. And again, what I would stress to you, and I just returned from Michigan, I've had a couple of stories out, I'll have another one coming out soon. You know, even though it may be true, or even though Republicans have said that the president has has altered his approach to Israel, his critics who want to see him do more to constrain Israel as it relates to the war in Gaza and things that are related, don't believe he's done anything material to do so. So despite a change in some of the rhetoric, despite a change in rhetoric to try and mollify the other side, squabbling with Netanyahu, demanding a ceasefire, they don't think he's done anything that's significant, because his overall policy, making sure Israel has military aid that it needs, and periodically defending Israel against all of these attacks, they just don't see it. And so I think politically, he's better off picking the lane where the polling overall is better and where you're going to perform better in the suburbs. And that's by sticking by Israel and doing what you can in terms of the other side of this, but not trying to have it both ways. I think that's where he can end up with a problem.
David Drucker, we got a minute, but I want to know what you found in Michigan. There are roughly 400,000 Arab Americans in Michigan, about 200,000 Jewish Americans in Michigan. What did you find when you went to Michigan?
Well, number one, Arab Americans broadly are unhappy, and it's because they have not seen a change in actual policy. Now, the Republicans I spoke to, interestingly enough, Hugh, don't expect any sort of backlash from Jewish voters in Oakland County and elsewhere. They just don't. So it's not to say that it couldn't happen, but they don't think the president has gone far enough in the other direction to make it happen. They just generally just don't expect it. Where they think this could hurt the president is with Arab Americans sitting on their hands, voting for third party candidates, maybe a few vote for Trump. But they just think that the prospect of them sitting on their hands, voting down ticket but not for president, is Biden's real danger right now.
You know, David, the President Biden won by a total of 43,000 votes in three states. Doesn't everyone know this is a coin toss already? It's just a coin toss. Everything he does is a coin toss.
Yeah. Look, everything either one of them does is a coin toss. I like to say they're the only ones that could lose to each other. And so in a game of inches, all of these mistakes could matter or none of them could matter. And we're just going to have to see how this thing
quick
develops. But, you know, all of these things are worth paying attention to.
Kamala Harris's approval rating is at 34%. Does that matter?
Of course it matters. You know, normally, as you know, vice presidents rate better than the presidents they serve under because they don't have to make all the big decisions. Kamala Harris rates less, and given Joe Biden's age, big problem.
Do you think any chance they dump her, David? We got 5 seconds.
No. No, it would be more trouble than it's worth, and they won't dump her.
I agree, but man, she's a liability. She's like playing NFL football with 10 players, or actually with 12 on the other side and 10 on your side. I'll be right back, America. Thank you, David M. Drucker. You can find him on X. You can find him at The Dispatch. And by Byron York of The Washington Examiner, Fox News contributor. Good morning, Byron.
Good morning, Hugh.
I want to play for you. You have already heard it, I'm sure. President Biden yesterday, after talking with AOC, cut number 5.
And the anti-Semitic protests on college campuses.
I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. That's why I've set up a program to deal with that. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians. And
so is that, Byron, a little bit of good people on both sides?
Sounds that way to me. I think everybody who heard it heard that. And by the way, you know, it's particularly ironic, of course, because when Joe Biden tells the story of his decision to run for the presidency at an advanced age, the reason he decided to run was Donald Trump, then President Donald Trump's reaction to the Charlottesville riot, in which Trump said that there were very fine people on both sides. And a lot of Republicans have felt, you know, if you look at the entire context of Trump's remarks, that he wasn't really saying that, but that became the reality in the media, and darned if Joe Biden didn't do something very, very similar yesterday.
Now, what will happen here, Byron? Of course, happens every time. We'll continue to hear about good people on both sides, and we will not hear about, that's why I condemn both sides. It's going to happen. You know that. I know that. Does the anti-Semitism on full display at Columbia, Yale, Harvard, Michigan, Berkeley, you name it, they got it. Does that hurt the president or do people not care?
Well, this one I'm not entirely sure about. Obviously, there's a huge disparity in media coverage of this. You know, this Columbia thing is quite serious. And just, you know, surfing a little bit yesterday, Fox News covered it in a pretty serious way. And the other places were doing the Donald Trump trial wall to wall. And so you got a much more balanced idea if you watch Fox of what was actually happening in the world, the various important things. Now, on the other hand, you know, I was looking at this new Harvard poll, the Institute of Politics poll, to do a poll every couple of years on young people's political attitudes. And they did kind of an interesting thing to try to find out what's the most important issue for you. And a lot of it was interesting. They asked, is this more important than that? So are jobs more important than climate change? And the answer is yes. They think jobs are more important than climate change. The one thing that was interesting, by the way, that inflation is their big deal, except for abortion. They think abortion is more important than most everything. So it's good news for Democrats in that. Okay, long way of introing. They asked them about Israel-Palestine. And when they asked, is blank more important than Israel-Palestine, most things they said were. The things they said were more important to them than Israel-Palestine were jobs, taxes, healthcare, immigration, housing, abortion, corruption, gun violence, crime, protecting democracy, inflation, and education. It just wasn't as big a deal when you know, maybe if you think about all the campuses across the country and the ones that we hear about these you know, displays of intifada-like demonstrations. So I don't really know how it's going to play when you look at a full general election across the country.
Well, I do think it is impossible for it not to have an impact on Jewish support for the president. I don't know how of an impact. It's got to have some impact on the support of Jewish Americans for the president because he's not supporting Israel. The idea that the State Department is getting ready to sanction an entire brigade in the IDF, I think that will be a titanic moment for the president if he does that. What do you think, Byron?
Yeah, and I think the flip side of that is Jewish support for Donald Trump, which I think is you know, if the election were held today, would be significantly higher than it was in the past because obviously Jews have voted, you know, overwhelmingly Democratic for the last generation or two. But I think so many people look at the Middle East and say, this actually would not have happened if Donald Trump had been president for two reasons, because Trump had completely throttled Iran, had cut it off from its own oil revenue and given it and made it far less money available for its foreign adventurism. And two, because of the Abraham Accords, because that Trump had kind of bypassed the Israel-Palestine issue and created a situation in which other countries in the region were normalizing relations with Israel, which was going to ultimately strangle the Palestinian issue. I mean, when everybody else, like Saudi Arabia, has made peace with Israel, then it was not going to be possible, I think, to have this enemy state right on their border. So I think a lot of Jewish voters, as well as everybody else, looks at this situation now and says, this would not have happened if Trump were still president.
That's what I think. Now, Byron, I've got a piece coming out in the Post pretty soon, and I think it might be today or it'll be tomorrow, on the vice presidential selection. It's the last piece of the puzzle. Kamala Harris's numbers are so awful. Donald Trump can go in any of 1,000 directions. He got 6 out of 10 veterans 4 years ago. If he puts Cotton or Ernst or Pompeo on there, you're going to lock up even more veterans. But after the very tense 2 weeks and the almost Cuban Missile Crisis showdown that we had between Iran and Israel, do you think there is an opening there for a quiet, solid, stable person like, say, Glenn Youngkin or Doug Burgum, someone who's just going to be Mike Pence 2.0 but without the Pence problems?
Well, obviously he won with Mike Pence in 2016, and you know, part of the reason was Pence was such a widely accepted establishment conservative, evangelical establishment conservative, that he really did, I think, overcome any of the problems Trump might have had with that group at that time. It's a different situation now, and I think the thing that Trump is looking for is almost a behavioral contrast, which is what you were just saying, really.
Yes.
Somebody like Youngkin, who just seems more stable and boring than Trump is. And I think voters might actually like that idea, because if you look, I think it was the New York Times Siena poll, which said, what's the thing you remember most about the Trump presidency? Well, the second thing, the second highest thing that people remembered about it was the economy, and things were good. And so that's great for Trump. Well, but the biggest thing that they remembered was his behavior, and that wasn't good for Trump. So I do think that if he gets somebody who's kind of a behavioral balance with him, that would probably help.
That's a great phrase. Do you think Burgum fits that as well? Because there's Youngkin brings with him education as a signature issue. Burgum brings technology. Someone's got to figure out what to do with AI, and you could put Burgum on there, and he'd actually know what they were talking about.
Yes, you could. And, you know, he's a good presence. He was on I was watching him on Fox News yesterday with Martha and Dana. He's, you know, getting a lot of exposure now. And so I think, you know, he would be a good choice. Now, we all have to say that, you know, Trump is really, really keeping this one close to the vest. As far as, you know, he's considering everybody, we're told. But we really, really don't have a very good idea what it is he's thinking.
Okay, my last question in terms of Biden, he's got a Department of Education with an Office of Civil Rights. He's got a Department of Justice with a Division of Civil Rights. Does it hurt him not to do anything about anti-Semitism everywhere on all the campuses that are elite? And I don't mean a demonstration. We've got a kid stabbed in the eye at Yale. We've got intimidation, physical assault going on at Columbia and other places. Should he deploy his DOJ and his Department of Education Office of Civil Rights?
I mean, yes. Why else would you have an Office of Civil Rights in the Department of Education? Isn't that what they would do?
No, they would be defending boys and girls sports. That's what they do right now.
But what you just said, looking into these incidents of actual physical violence and physical intimidation. And that's the sort of thing that Biden could say instead of yesterday saying there are very fine people on both sides. That's the sort of thing he could have said. I have dispatched the investigators from the Office of Civil Rights and the Department of Education are going to be looking into this very closely. And, you know, people will be punished to the fullest extent of the law. He could have said that, but he didn't.
He did not. I don't think he can. And we'll continue to watch that. Byron York, you can follow him on Twitter at Byron York. You can read him in the Washington Examiner. You see him on Fox News where he's a contributor. Don't go anywhere, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, and I'll be right back. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by United States Senator Tom Cotton of Arkansas. Good morning, Senator Cotton. Welcome back.
Good morning, Hugh. Good to be back with you.
Will you be voting for the package of national security bills that the House passed on Saturday?
I will, Hugh, and I believe it'll get a large vote, over 75 votes. It got 70 votes in February. Speaker Johnson skillfully crafted this package and moved it through the House. One major improvement, Hugh, as you know, is the addition of the TikTok divestiture bill. I can't stress enough what an important bill that is, what a golden opportunity it is to cram it down the Senate Democrats' throat after Chuck Schumer and Maria Cantwell spent the last month dithering and trying to bottled up in committee. So once we pass this bill and it's signed into law, then TikTok's parent company, ByteDance, will have 9 months to sell TikTok to an American or friendly nation's ownership group, or it will be removed from app stores in America. And I think, Hugh, if the Chinese Communist Party does not allow ByteDance to sell TikTok to an American company, it just strengthens the need and tells you all you need to know about why TikTok is dangerous to this country.
Now, Senator, you're also on Judiciary, and right now we're watching anti-Semitism explode at not at Columbia and Yale, but across the United States, NYU, Berkeley, you name it. They've got an anti-Semitic outburst that is threatening Jewish students on campus. There is an Office of Civil Rights at the Department of Education, but there is a Division of Civil Rights at Justice. Do you think DOJ ought to be deploying teams to these campuses to arrest if necessary, and certainly to watch and take notes so that these colleges and universities can be held to account for their refusal to shut down anti-Semitic endangerment of Jewish students?
Well, Hugh, there's no question that this administration has an obligation to protect the rights of Jewish students and Jewish citizens on these campuses and all around the country, and they're not doing so. You know, I've demanded answers from Attorney General Garland and Secretary of Education Cardona on why they're sitting on their hands in the face of nascent pogroms at places like Columbia University. But again, I wouldn't expect much action from this administration because they're paralyzed by indecision. On the one hand, you have normal, sane Americans, regardless of their faith, who see what these pro-Hamas mobs are doing to Jewish students. But on the other hand, you have all these young progressive voters and Arab Americans in Michigan, and the Biden administration is conducting all policy based on electoral college calculations. But I just think it's appalling that Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi have let this anti-Semitic fringe metastasize inside their party for years to the point where they're paralyzed by indecision. And, you know, Hugh, for 9 years now, we've had liberals living in a fantasy where Trump is Hitler and their brave resistance shows what they would have done in Germany in the 1930s. But in the face of actual nascent pogroms on college campuses, their complete silence, and in some cases, their support for these mobs tells us what they actually would have done in Germany in the 1930s.
Here is what President Biden said about that yesterday. Cut number five.
And the anti-Semitic protests on college campuses.
I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. That's why I've set up a program to deal with that. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians.
So, Senator Cotton, is that good people on both sides equivalency here?
Yeah, Hugh, of course, there's no equivalence whatsoever between mobs that are harassing Jewish students, not letting them enter their dorms or college campuses, threatening them with physical violence. And on the other hand, people that support Israel and understand that all Palestinian suffering and civilian casualties in Gaza are the result of Hamas imposing that suffering on their own people, trying to have civilian casualties. And you're right that what Joe Biden said there, again, is trying to walk this line that he's created for his own electoral considerations when he himself said that he got into the race, Hugh, in 2020 because he said that Donald Trump supported both sides between neo-Nazis or white supremacists and protesters at Charlottesville. And that was always the media concocted lie. Of course, what Trump was talking about was both sides of the debate about a statue in Charlottesville. But he can't draw a strong distinction between anti-Semitic mobs on the one hand and people who understand there are civilian casualties in Gaza, but that those civilian casualties are the responsibility of Hamas, not Israel.
Last question, Senator. If the State Department sanctions units of the Israeli Defense Forces, what will your reaction be?
Well, it's totally inappropriate to do that to an element of a friendly nation, especially a nation like Israel, whose military always goes above and beyond the demands of laws of war.
Senator Tom Cotton, good to talk to you early today. Thank you, Senator. I'll talk to you again next week. Don't go anywhere, America. Stav is next on The Hugh Hewitt Show.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolfe. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Welcome back, America. Admiral James Stavridis, retired United States Navy, former Allied Supreme Commander, former head of Southern Command, joins me. Good morning, Admiral. How are you?
Doing well. How's it going, Hugh?
Very good. Admiral, in your new book, 2054, you look ahead a long way towards the future of warfare. I want to bring the horizon back to a year from now because the Congress just gave Ukraine $60 billion. They will be voting on it today. Senator Cotton just said it's going to pass with 75 votes. I'm very glad it's going to pass. What difference will that make? What do you expect the war in Ukraine to look like a year from now?
Hey, can I start by just saying Congress has done the right thing here by 75%. In other words, the House of Representatives passed this roughly 300 to 100, and the Senate is going to pass it 75 to 25, I'm not good at math, but that sounds like 75% approval rating for going forward and supporting an ally who's willing to fight and die if we give them the tools. So I don't often say this, but well done, House of Representatives. Well done, Senate. And well done, President, when he signs it. This is government working, in my view. How this will look in a year is very different than if we had decided not to do this. And what will be on the battlefield that'll make a difference will be a better air defense, particularly to protect the critical infrastructure of Ukraine, much more ammunition. And that's going to ramp up as the year goes on. F-16s will be operating in numbers, probably 45 of them by that time. ATACMs, the long-range surface-to-surface missiles, will be striking Crimea. Drones purchased by Ukraine, built by Ukraine in many cases, better cyber, all of that. And I'll conclude with this. Every dollar spent on that, of every dollar spent on that, Hugh, 90% of those dollars are coming right back to the U.S. defense industrial base. This is a classic win, win, win.
Now, Admiral, I'm cautioning. I supported the bill, but I'm cautioning people. This does not mean a breakout of Ukraine. I think we are in a static situation. Do you agree with me?
I do. And in one sense, that's tragic because it means that Vladimir Putin will remain in possession of, let's call it, 15% of the landmass of Ukraine. But on the other hand, Hugh, and I think this is where you're going and many other smart observers, this keeps Ukraine in the fight at a level that permits them to negotiate with Russia. And it also discourages Putin and encourages him to negotiate. I think the outcome of this, back to where will we be in a year, I don't think it'll be triumphant Ukraine, but I think it could be a negotiated outcome that much more favors Ukraine than it would have without this agreement.
Now, Admiral, there's a story this morning in the Times of Israel that satellite images show tent compound under construction in Khan Yunis ahead of possible Rafah operation. I expect Rafah to be entered within 2 weeks. My question is, what did you make of the Israeli counterstrike? What did that say to you as the person who has operated at that kind of level where messages get sent when we can't see what the message is?
That message was very cleverly and operationally skillfully delivered. And here's the message. Iran, we know where your air defenses are. We know where your bases are. We can put drones overhead them anytime we want to. I've said this before, but this was like a burglar breaking into your house, walking up to the safe that contains your most precious commodities, and instead of blowing it up or stealing it, the thief puts a yellow sticky on it that says, "I'll be back, ... anytime I want." I think that's a very clever signal that doesn't escalate. It gave Iran the chance to back down, which they did, and it preserved a very fragile peace in the Middle East. I thought it was signal sent, signal delivered, and I think it sent a shiver up the spine of the Iranian mullahs.
Now, I want to ask, Admiral, just whether you know of, there are reports, they are unconfirmed, that the State Department is preparing to sanction a unit in the IDF. I don't know that that's ever happened to an ally before. In your vast memory of what has happened in the history of warfare, have we ever sanctioned an allied unit?
Not to my knowledge. And it would be shocking to the Israeli military, which counts on us for strong support across the board. I think it would be a very difficult situation on both sides of the alliance if that were to occur. I haven't dug into the details of this one, Hugh. It bears really looking at facts before leaping to judgment. But certainly it is correct to say, in my experience, unheard of. And the repercussions of doing so, whether warranted or not, are going to be long felt.
Yeah, I don't know that it's going to happen. It seemed to me to be so out of left field that it might be somebody leaking at the State Department in an attempt to bring pressure to bear on the Israelis. But I sure hope Secretary Blinken doesn't do that. I want to close this way, Admiral. We're a little pressed for time this morning. People forget you were an administrator of a university in one of your many lives. What would you be doing if you were president of Columbia right now?
Well, I'll tell you what I'd be doing if I were the dean of the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University, which I was. Tufts has been roiled with protests along with about a dozen other major universities. I would be saying to my students, you are free to protest within the boundaries and the rules which I am establishing as the dean, as the university. That includes no hate speech, no chanting of October 7th, let's do it again. No use of symbols that are dramatically hate speech oriented against Jewish populations. And I would say to the students, if you violate those, this is not a warning and pat you on the head situation. This is a step one, you're suspended. We'll deactivate your school identification card. Anything you have in the hopper, your graduation, your papers, your course are suspended. And step two, if you do it again, you're expelled. And by the way, you get expelled from Tufts University. Good luck getting into another institution of higher education. I think it's
last
time
question,
to really crack
Admiral,
down.
If you had faculty members who are, you know, faculty are tenured, and we know how strong tenure is, and you and I both appreciate tenure. I'm tenured. It's to protect the speech. But what would you do to a tenured member of the faculty who participated in anti-Semitic hate speech?
Bring them in and tell them exactly the same thing I said to the students. Tenure does not protect you from use of hate speech. And hate speech is not complicated to detect. When you say from the river to the sea, all of Palestine will be free, that's translation. The state of Israel must be destroyed and the Jewish population destroyed. That's hate speech, in my view.
I'm in a complete agreement with Admiral Stab, and I hope other administrators out there are listening to him. He's been there and he's done that, and I hope they do as well. Admiral Stab, read us his new book, 2054. Go and get it. He and Mr. Ackerman, Elliot Ackerman, have written another bestseller on the future of warfare, 2054. Generalissimo, are you around today? Are you doing a podcast today, the Through the Chaos podcast?
No, a Look Through the Chaos podcast will populate today. It will be on Apple and Spotify. We recorded it yesterday.
Was Campbell wrong again?
Campbell's wrong, although at the
end... All the time. Don't say although, just stop it all. All the time, Campbell.
No, he's not wrong all the time. No, he's not wrong all the time. We covered what you actually wanted to cover, which is the chaos of how to get through the education system, the chaos of the House Republican conference and what a mess they are. But then we also talked at the end about the bills that passed and why Campbell was against them. And then I cornered him. I actually cornered him on it and got him.
Don't tell me. I want to hear it. Don't tell me.
Okay.
I will listen.
I think you'll be
Did you go in for the kill like a narwhal?
I think I got him.
You got him?
I think I got him.
Is he bleeding in a corner somewhere?
I think I channeled my inner Hugh where, you know, he came out of that thinking, well, that wasn't too bad. I wonder where all this blood came from.
Okay, good. Now, I want to ask you, myphdweightloss.com.
Yep.
864-644-1900, that's
864-644-1900.
MyPhdWeightLoss.com does indeed work. Look at Skinny Dwayne. There's 50 pounds less of him. MyPhdWeightLoss.com. It works if you work it. The next senator from Michigan, Mike Rogers, joins me next, America. Stay tuned. One of the unexpected close Senate races in the fall of 2024 is in Michigan, of all places, because Mike Rogers got off the bench. He retired. He was going to work. He's a former congressman. Now he's going to go to the Senate. Mike Rogers, welcome. Good to talk to you. Great to have you back.
Hugh, it is always good to be back, my friend. Thanks for all that you do.
Now, Mike, you're from Livingston County, which is pretty close to Ann Arbor. I used to get a one-way ticket to Ann Arbor, get there, and then get back to the safe place in Ohio. You went to Adrian College, which is not the crazy University of Michigan. How does the campaign look? Because you're among the normal people of Michigan.
Well, thank you. We think it looks fantastic. Listen, Mominomics are going to be the rule of this campaign, and the Democrats are losing all of it. Your food costs, your gas costs, your household good costs. They're going to mandate, the Democrats are mandating a car that you have to buy that does not work for your family. And by the way, 85% of the process on that electric vehicle happens in China. All of these things they cannot run away from. The border and crime. We have crime happening here in the state of Michigan as a result of the border and people violating their visas and doing other things here in the state of Michigan. All of that comes under my my term of Mominomics, and they're going to lose the Mominomics fight this year. And that's why the votes are turning in Michigan. That's why Trump is winning in Michigan. And that's why we start out tied with our Democrat challenger going into the fall election, which is really good for a Republican this far out.
Well, Michigan does occasionally elect a Republican senator, and it is an open seat. So this is one of the times where that could actually happen. But tell me something, Congressman, in terms of the Detroit suburbs, everyone's focused on the Arab American community outside of Michigan. I'm sure you want their votes as well. Are they really turning against Joe Biden because he's standing with Israel?
Yes, and it's getting more passionate for them by the day. So think of this, 113,000 mostly Muslim Americans, Arab Muslim Americans to be exact, got out of bed on a cold February day in Michigan, drove down to the poll, and voted uncommitted. That's intensity, Hugh. That's an intensity we just haven't seen in a long time. And they're saying, hey, they're not voting for him, and they may not vote at all. Think of this number. If just 10% of them say live up to that, not voting at all, that's the margin that Donald Trump won by in 2016. And so they have a Muslim, Arab Muslim problem. And by the way, we're not walking away. I'm very pro-Israel. They have a kind of a saying in that part of Michigan where it's better to be stabbed in the face than stabbed in the back. We go in knowing full well where we are on Israel, but we talk about the other important factors. They're very entrepreneurial. They want their kids to get a good education. Not real thrilled about biological men hanging out in their daughter's locker room in high school. All of the things that would bring them back to the Republican Party, I think, are fair game here. So we're going to go and have those conversations with them. And again, knowing where we are on Israel, that they're still willing to meet with us. Hugely important. Secondly, auto workers here, Hugh, this is a traditional Democrat bloc. They are not pleased with this EV mandate. 30 to 40% less labor, which means less jobs here in Michigan. It means less second and third tier supplier jobs in Michigan, and auto workers know it. Not very amused. And lastly, black males are drifting away from the Democrat Party in Southeast Michigan at a really interesting rate, and we're having conversations in those communities as well. So they've got a coalition problem, and they have an issue problem, and I think that's going to spell victory for us here in Michigan come the fall.
Well, Mike Rogers, my hometown is only about 5 hours from Ann Arbor. I would drive back and forth in Ohio. Ohio's overrun with fentanyl. I don't know what Michigan is like, especially in the UP and in the other northern rural areas, but is fentanyl a problem in Michigan as well?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We had 3,000 deaths from fentanyl in 2023, just in Michigan. And we just seized one of the largest seizures, certainly in our state ever, enough to kill over a million people. Remember, this stuff is so potent, just a small, tiny bit of it can kill you. I think the Chinese know exactly what they're doing. They're putting the precursors in the hands of the drug cartels. The drug cartels are moving it across a very open border, and it's showing up in Ohio and Michigan and all around the country, and it's killing people, 100,000 people.
I'm looking forward to having a bureau agent. You were there when the FBI was working. It's broken.
Yes.
Maybe you can help repair it. How do people get involved with your campaign, and how much money do you have to raise, Mike? Because this is going to be a big race.
Oh, and the Democrats, by the way, you are pouring money in here, and it's all under the reportable cap. I think I find that unusual. So what we're going to have to do is good old-fashioned Americans who want to make sure that America is safe, is strong around the world, and has an economy and a government that works for you, not against you. Well, they're going to need to get involved. Please, you can get us at Rogers, R-O-G-E-R-S, for Senate.com. We can win this thing. We're just going to need the help from a lot of friends who care about their country.
Rogers, R-O-G-E-R-S, F-O-R, Senate.com. Rogers for Senate.com. Mike Rogers can win this. Michigan, I didn't think was in play. It is in play because Mike got off the bench, dusted himself off, and said, I'll get back in the game to help Michigan. Boy, does Michigan need a lot of help. Rogers for Senate.com. Thank you, Mike. Keep coming back. I appreciate it. Don't go anywhere, America. Hour number three of the Hugh Hewitt Show, straight ahead. Joined by Brett Baer, host of Special Report. You watch Special Report every night at 6 o'clock on the Fox News Channel. Good morning, Brett.
Good morning, Hugh.
I assume you're leading off the show tonight with the Cavaliers having a 2-0 lead over the Magic. But if for some reason that doesn't make it there, maybe you're going to use this clip from President Biden yesterday. Can you play cut number five for Brett Baer?
And the anti-Semitic protests on college campuses.
I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. That's why I've set up a program to deal with that. I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians.
So, Brett Baer, what do you make of that? Is that a little whiff of both sides have good people on it?
Boy, it sure sounded like it, and a number of people picked up on that, including Senator John Fetterman, who said, you know, you just add tiki torches to the people at Columbia protesting, and you have Charlottesville. And, you know, you look back to Vice President Biden's launch of his campaign in 2020, and he specifically went after Trump, some people said unfairly, for how he characterized very good people on both sides of Charlottesville and that protest. I think that this is a real communication problem for President Biden. And I think if you look back, George W. Bush, Clinton, President Obama would have come out and had just a straight statement. Maybe they would call a cabinet meeting. Maybe they would do something just straight to camera about the anti-Semitic protests, as opposed to having someone yell the question while walking in the woods. He references this program. Well, there was, you know, they put a statement and a something that they were launching in October of 23 to prevent anti-Semitism on college campuses. You know, it's April. It's not really, doesn't seem to have taken.
Yeah, Brett, that program, I'm glad you looked it up because I thought he was just mumbling. I can't figure out. Right now, I've got a column over at FoxNews.com. Joe Biden has an anti-Semitism problem. He's been a longtime supporter of Israel, but he doesn't want to deal with this for reasons that have to do with Michigan. Can he get away with doing nothing, Brett?
I don't think so. I think it exacerbates the problem, and it only – I actually think he's losing American Jews who are fed up with this kind of display that is in their face that maybe they hadn't really seen before. You look at Robert Kraft of the Patriots and speaking out about Columbia and what he's seeing. You know, he does a lot, has his own organization fighting anti-Semitism around the world. And, I mean, this is a guy who knows. I think there's more and more of those people who are stepping up and saying this is unacceptable. And for the White House, it just seems like low-hanging fruit to give this statement straight, no caveats. You know, the statement they put out in November included fighting anti-Semitism and Islamophobia. Well, we're not seeing a lot of Islamophobia.
There were two or three terrible incidents of Islamophobia early on. But right now we are dealing with thousands of people involved in scores of cities in ways that intimidate Jews. And I have never seen it. I'm 68. I have never seen anything like this, nor did I imagine it was possible in America. Now, some of your competitors are out there covering a trial from nowhere about nothing in New York, wall to wall. How are you covering these protests? Do they lead Special Report?
Yeah, I mean, I think yesterday we actually led with the trial. It was the first day, and we thought that it was you know, worthwhile. But we also put in the lead about the protests, and that was A2 in our show. But today it seems like the protests and the reaction to it is probably leadable. We'll see what happens by 6 p.m. I'm anchoring for Bill Hemmer with Dan Aprino here from 9 to 11 this morning.
I better let you go, but I hope you ask Dana what would she say from the front of the press room, because, Brett, I'm kind of shocked. I'm not Jewish. You're not Jewish, but I just have to think, American Jews are more than a little bit afraid that this is going to spread. Do you think so?
I do think so. And I talked to Dana this morning. We had a conference call about the show, and her exact thoughts were that they would have been, in any administration, been leading the way with trying to stamp this out, like make it a priority, job one, so that, you know, the message is very, very clear from the president himself. And she's a little befuddled as to why this administration is not doing that.
Well, I will let you go. I didn't know you were doing double duty this morning. Thank you for making time. Brett always keeps his commitments, even when he's got to do double duty at Fox. Good luck, Brett Baer, up in New York today, helping with Dana on the morning show. Bill Hemmer, a Miami of Ohio grad. No wonder he's taking the day off. Miami of Ohio people don't work in April. I think that's well known in the news business that Miami of Ohio people are unreliable in April.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.